Hello, and welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club or common reading program for geek culture. Each episode, we select a topic to discuss from different geeky, nerdy perspectives. Today, we've got another Versus episode. Instead of having four representatives relating their domains to a single topic... Oh my god.
Shut the fuck up. We're not even...
I just couldn't get through the intro. Rather than four representatives relating their domains to a single topic, we have three people... Two of whom will go head-to-head fighting over whose domain is better. After each makes a case for their domain, they will launch into a lengthy debate, of which I will be the judge.
We've locked eyes, and now we have to fight each other.
Thanks for those jokes about the topic chatter, even though we haven't fucking said what it is yet.
When the dust has settled, I will name the victor of this intense and bloody affair. Our contestants this episode, who will not keep shutting up, or will not shut up, refuse to...
Yes.
You go, the one who spoke.
Hi, I'm Jeff, and this week I am representing Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire.
Hi, I'm Trainer Chowder.
Shut up.
And I'm...
Sorry, I'm Juggler Jeff.
And I'm gonna be repping Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
And I'm your host, Champion Austin.
I thought we agreed on Hex Maniac.
Well, I thought that was just for the Pokemon chat. And I don't know if it's really Hex Maniac because, like, I started playing a lot of Monotype on Showdown recently, and I really like playing Bugs. But that might just be because I love Volcarona.
What does that make you? Bug Catcher?
Bug Catcher Austin, yeah. Ben.
Well, I really like Poison types, but I feel like there's not one for Poison types. Is it, like, Punk? Do the Punk people have Poison types?
I guess generally you give that to either Punk or Scientist, yeah.
I feel like Scientists have Electric and Steel types.
But no, some of them also have Muck, I've seen.
Yeah.
Don't they? I don't know. Anywho, for this episode's topic, I'm going to determine whether the 6th generation remakes of the 3rd generation games or the 4th generation remakes of the 2nd generation games are better remakes of Pokemon games. Is that
yeah,
good?
I mean, I was just talking about better games in general.
Oh, okay.
You know? Like, if Chowder had decided to claim that fucking, like, X and Y were better than ORAS, then, you know. In my opinion, Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, or ORAS, for us who are sophisticated and don't like saying multiple words, are the best Pokemon games in the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, similar thing. I think Heart Gold and Soul Silver are the...
It makes sense that both of us are talking about remakes because the remakes take, like, the story of the old games and then they, like, refine it and add new features. So yeah. I think it's only natural that the remakes are considered the best of the games in the franchise.
That makes sense. And just so you listeners know, we are going to... Well, I am the arbiter of justice here. I'm going to be judging these fine young trainers' arguments based on how well they persuade me that these remakes are, like, improvements over the old games and adding value instead of just stealing money from former children. And then they're each going to talk about, like, the different qualities that each game has that they would look at, like, maybe independently of its past. And I guess also, you might expect something like this if you're into Pokemon at all, but we're probably not going to focus as much on Pokemon design in those remakes, just because those are all generation dependent and everyone has their own opinions. Everyone's opinions on Pokemon design is probably valid unless you're a Gen 1er, in which case you can rot. So let's go backwards. Jeff, tell me about the more recent stuff.
I'm talking about Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, which are technically in the 6th generation of Pokemon games following X and Y, but are remakes of the 3rd generation of Pokemon games, Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald. The basic plot revolves around, like all the Pokemon games, you're just fighting the various gyms in the region and trying to build up to fighting the Elite Four. Meanwhile, there's some evil team that's doing something nefarious in the background that you have to stop. In this game, depending on which game you play, if it's Omega Ruby, you're going to be fighting Team Magma, and if it's Alpha Sapphire, you're going to be fighting Team Aqua. Team Magma is trying to basically get rid of the ocean, and Team Aqua is trying to drown the entire world for reasons. They think it would be better. I don't know. One of them really likes fish, and the other one really hates fish. That's just the way it goes.
They also failed Earth Science.
Yeah, don't... I'm not gonna make any arguments on the narrative qualities of Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. I think that Archie and Maxie are very entertaining villains. I would not argue that they're intelligent ones. It basically follows the same plot as Ruby and Sapphire, as you would expect, but there are some differences. For instance, in Sixth Generation, the addition of Mega Evolution was added in, so that kind of worked into the plot. And Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire is really where it became canon in the Pokemon universe, that things are actually in some sort of multiverse. So basically they're saying, hey, Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald also happened, but this is like an alternate version of those events. So everything is a little bit different. It's basically just giving themselves creative license to make the changes while still not just retconning their source material, basically. So that's the plot and stuff. Some notable features that I wanted to talk about, which I will, you know, later talk about how I think that it affects the game, but I'm just going to talk about what they are right now. The first one that I want to talk about is the soaring in the sky feature. So basically, in Ruby and Sapphire, there's these legendary Pokemon, Latias and Latios, which, similar to previous games, you had to catch via, like, roaming, which means the Pokemon would just travel around the region and you'd have to encounter it randomly. But in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, that got changed. Depending on which game, I don't remember, I assume that Latias is for Omega Ruby and Latios is for Alpha Sapphire, but I don't remember.
No, it's switched.
It
they
is
did
switched.
Some of that. Yeah, because
okay.
they, you know.
Whatever. Either way, as part of the plot, you actually just get one of these Pokemon given to you, sort of. Like, you encounter it, and it's like, oh, Latias or Latios decides to join your party, and he's yours now, and you don't have to fight for it. And the reason that that is a thing is because they added this feature where you get this item called the Aeon Flute, and if you give that flute a whistle, Latias or Latios will come down and just pick you up and Mega Evolve. And you can ride it around the region, and you get this, like, 3D render of the map that you can fly around. It's really cool. It's sort of like, if you've ever played a game like Kirby Air Ride, it's kind of like that.
Ah, the classic.
Yeah. So, you get a nice 3D render of the map, which is not really something that we've ever had in a Pokemon game before. And you can fly around it and kind of interact with things. And there are a lot of features that are added from that. One of the things that it is that usually in the Pokemon games, the way that you get from place to place is by having a Pokemon that knows the Hidden Machine, or HM, Fly, which is a special move that you have to put on one of the Pokemon in your party, and it can fly you from city to city. But in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, you do have Fly, but then later in the game when you get the Aeon Float, instead of having to have a Pokemon with Fly in your party, you can get around that way instead, because you don't have to have Latias or Latios in your party to do that. They'll just show up no matter what. So there's this Pokemon in 6th Gen called Hoopa, which is like this little trickster that opens portals to other dimensions and shit like that. And the way that they use it in ORAS is, well, Hoopa's not actually in the game, but there's an implication that Hoopa is putting all these portals around, because you can get to areas that you can only encounter through soaring in the sky, and you'll find these portals, and inside these portals will be these legendary Pokemon from previous games. And you can find almost every single legendary prior, besides like the mythical Pokemon that you can only get via code, and the birds from Gen 1, I think. And then there's a few that are version exclusive to Omega Ruby or Alpha Sapphire, and then ones that you can only get if you have both of the version exclusive ones, which you can get by trading with your friends.
I'm guessing the legendary bird trio isn't there because, like, you can get them in X and Y.
So. Yeah, I think that is exactly why. So that's another thing that you can do. You can go around and find these portals, and I'll talk more about that later. Another feature is that, so in Ruby and Sapphire, they had this event for the Pokemon Deoxys, where you'd find it on some, like, Mirage Island, I think.
Yeah. Or you wouldn't.
I don't remember how that feature
Mirage was. Island was fucked.
Wasn't it that you could randomly encounter Mirage Island, but it would only have Deoxys on it if you got some special code for that or something?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, in this game, there's actually a post-game plot where you go... And there's some crazy shit about this woman named Xenia who's, like, turns out, just initiated all of the plots of Team Magma and Team Aqua. Like, she actually told them how to reawaken the legendaries, because they're trying to basically get Kyogre or Groudon to drown or drought the world, basically, right? And it turns out she was actually the one who gave them the information how to do that, and she wanted to do that to reawaken Rayquaza, And the reason she wanted to reawaken Rayquaza is so that Rayquaza would go and stop this meteor that's coming to Earth. I think that's what it was. And the meteor has Deoxys in it, is the long and short. So you can get Deoxys in the game. Basically, you don't need the Mirage Island for Deoxys, but in the Soaring the Sky feature, they still have these Mirage spots that show up randomly each day. And depending on the location of the Mirage Island, it'll have different Pokemon that you wouldn't normally be able to obtain in the game. Basically, what Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire was doing with this is it was taking all of the Pokemon that you could not obtain in the other Gen 6 games, X and Y, and making sure that you could get everything else.
How thoughtful.
Yeah, so that was the 6th Gen game, so they're making sure that you could pretty much fill out your Pokedex and get everything. I don't know, it just like added a really cool element where you'd get to go and explore every day and see which Pokemon you'd find. So there's that. Another notable feature is the Dex Nav, which is this little radar system that, like, after you'd encounter a Pokemon in a region, it would show up on your Dex Nav and be like, hey, you see that this Pokemon is in that region, to help you sort of... It just gives you a log of, like, which Pokemon is in which region, and then you can also click on that Pokemon to try to find a specific Pokemon if you've already encountered it. Once you beat every Pokemon game, you pretty much get the National Pokedex, so you can go and get the other generation's Pokemon instead of just the regional Pokemon. So after you beat the Elite Four in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, you have special Pokemon that would show up on the Dex Nav through random encounters that were from other generations. So that was a cool feature. Apart from that, that's pretty much all I wanted to talk about. There's another thing, the Battle Resort is a thing that exists. I'm going to talk more about why that's beneficial later, but it's that's pretty much the features I wanted to talk about.
Okay, cool. Sounds like a fun time. I mean, I think it was definitely more fun to play it than to listen to it, but, you know, still good stuff, Jeff.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get all my shit on the table, okay?
Yeah, that's fair. Go.
So, yeah, as said before, I am covering Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver. They are fourth generation remakes of second generation game Gold and Silver. Elements of Pokemon Crystal actually make it in Heart Gold and Soul Silver. So the basic plot of the game is, as always, beat the 8 gym leaders and beat the champion, right? Along the way, you got the evil team, Team Rocket, making a return from the first generation games to do evil stuff, and along the way, you have a rival named Silver, who's a douchebag.
I thought his name is actually Soul. Whatever. It doesn't matter. You name him whatever you want to name him. His name is Douchebag McFuckface.
Really. It really says more about you than it does about him.
Yeah. True.
Anyways, no, but like, the cool thing about Heart Gold and Soul Silver is pretty much a holdover from Gold and Silver in that once you beat the Elite Four, the Kanto region opens up and you can actually go through the Kanto region and beat the 8 gym leaders there and eventually fight against Red on Mount Silver. And
Chatter, remind me, do you fight the Elite Four twice in that game, or do you beat the Elite Four after Johto and then go fight the Kanto people and then Red?
You beat the Elite Four, go to Kanto, beat the Kanto people, and then fight Red.
Yeah.
So you don't fight the Kanto Elite Four?
No, because...
Oh, that's the same. It's the same Elite Four, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, wait. No, it's not.
It's technically the same organization, though. Some of the people have changed.
Yes, I know that some of the people have changed, but it is, like, the same group, right?
Yeah, it's the same organization.
It's not the same as all the other Pokemon games where each region has their own Elite Four.
Yeah.
Johto and Kanto share an Elite Four, correct?
Yeah, it's the Indigo League. It's not the Kanto League.
Right.
Anyways, yeah, like, and that's super cool. Heart Gold and Soul Silver, I feel, has one of the best single player heroes in the entire series because of how much it ties into the first game. You get to go through the game, see how the events of the first game affects the events of the second game, such as Team Rocket. They actually disbanded between first and second game, and
allegedly.
When you see them again here, they're actually trying to, like, bring the organization back and, like, reach out to Giovanni, who has gone missing, leader of the Team Rocket in Gen 1. And also just, like, being able to go back to your old stomping grounds in Gen 1 and, like, battle all those gym leaders again, and then eventually fight Red again.
And then battle yourself.
Indeed. Your greatest foe, you.
Yeah, it turns out you were just a really creepy, stoic motherfucker the whole time.
Yeah, it's like you got two games in one.
I've got some counter arguments to that claim, which I'll get into later. But
so yeah, it's a more simpler story. But like the joy of Pokemon, I feel, is the ability to create your own story, which I'll get more into in the discussion. As for features, Heart Gold and Soul Silver, they have a much bigger post game because beating the Elite Four opens up the Kanto region. They have a few events for mythical Pokemon like Celebi, which actually adds more to the story.
Yeah, I do miss that kind of feature where they didn't just give it to you, they had like actual...
Yeah, features added in include the outside abilities for the power items, being that they can make breeding perfect IV Pokemon easier. There's the shiny charm you can get from collecting all the Pokemon. There are post-game Pokemon you can get, such as Groudon and Kyogre and Rayquaza, on top of Latios and Latias.
You can get the Gen 4 guys too, right?
Yeah, I think they're version exclusive, though. You get one in one and one for the other.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of optional side stuff you can do, such as Union Cave and Mount Mortar. And ultimately, you also have the ability to fight trainers, whether gym leaders or for trainers you came across on the road. And that's really about it. The thing about Heart Gold and Soul Silver is Gen 4 brought in, like, a lot of huge changes, but, like, Diamond and Pearl themselves were very imperfect games.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing with ORAS and X and Y, honestly.
Yeah, and Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver, when I did my research and looked through, it didn't add a whole lot of, like, big features like ORAS did. Instead, it mostly just refined the Pokemon formula, much like how Gold and Silver refined and built upon Gen 1, and it just creates a more solid experience that I find is super enjoyable. And, yeah, you can say that ORAS does a lot to make the multiplayer and the metagame great, but, like, I think that if the core experience of the Pokemon game isn't worthwhile, then there's going to be big problems. So
I didn't say it wasn't worthwhile. I just said that that's also a big part of it. I thoroughly enjoy but we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Time Wolf still has like a minute and a half.
No, actually, I'm good here. That was all I had to really say.
Okay. Time Wolf, I'm good here. That was all I really had to say. 2017. So you guys have each talked about the strong points of your games in your opinions. This is sort of like a little debate. I guess I'm gonna bounce this off both of you. Try to keep your answers kind of short for this one because I'm gonna be firing a couple questions at each of you.
Okay.
And if you want to say something, raise your hand and I'll tell you whether or not you're allowed to speak. But if I ask you a question, like by default, you're allowed to speak.
You don't have to just raise your hands the whole time.
Jeffrey, I was gonna ask you first because you didn't really talk about it, and it was sort of an issue that Time Wolf brought up earlier. Time Wolf said that like Heart Gold Soul Silver has super strong single player like story stuff going on, and I wanted to know what you really thought about ORAS in that regard. You don't have to spend too much time on it if you don't think it's a stronger point of your game, but yeah, shoot.
Well, first of all, I think that a lot of the thing from Heart Gold and Soul Silver is piggybacking off of the Gen 1 games in terms of plot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite as original, I think, as the plot in Gen 3 and ORAS in general. I think that while incredibly stupid and silly, the whole plot with Kyogre and Groudon and Team Aqua and Magma is really funny.
Yeah.
So there's some cool plot elements. I think that the main argument for Heart Gold and Soul Silver being a good single-player experience is the fact that, like you mentioned earlier, Austin, that people say it's essentially two games in one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's really the case, honestly. On paper, it really seems that way, and it's really cool to go see all of the people from Gen 1 again and see how their lives have been updated. But by the time that you actually get to that point in the game, your Pokemon are way higher level than any of the gym leaders' Pokemon. Like, they don't level them up enough. So really, it just adds a lot of extra easy game elements that aren't really that entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool that you get to go see how people's lives have changed, but I don't think it's the case that it's the same as, like, oh, adding on a whole other game. Because by that point, all of the evil team's plans are already gone. And I don't think that even in the first part, like the Johto part of Heart Gold and Soul Silver, I don't think that the plot is that compelling with the whole Team Rocket thing. Because, like Chowder said before, they sort of disbanded, but not really. But Giovanni's not really that involved.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of a chaotic group doing random evil acts instead of having actual goal with actual stakes. So
yeah.
Well, like, look at. With the difficulty thing, the Pokemon games have never been, like, aggressively challenging, except maybe the first generation.
But even for Pokemon standards, I'm saying.
Well, I'm gonna bring this up as a knock against Oris, but, like, I played through the game recently, and it's not hard, but the updates to each of the gym leaders and the updates to the Kanto gym leaders also, they're just beefed up enough that it makes you, like, take one step back. Like, my problem with Oras is you can basically, like, one-hit kill anybody without, like, even having to, like, think about the mechanics of the game too hard. I found myself sweeping through Oras a lot, whereas in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, I just found myself having to at least think about the game.
Well, the thing about Heart Gold and Soul Silver, though, is it's like, I agree that there's a lot of initial stuff in Johto when you're fighting the gym leaders, but by the time that you are powerful enough to defeat the Elite Four, you're way too powerful for any of the Kanto gym leaders. So basically the second half of the game, which is like one of its huge selling points, is just not as difficult as the rest of the game.
But Red is one of the toughest trainers in the entire series.
Yeah, Red is difficult, but you have to do a lot of irrelevant stuff to get there. And the thing with Oras is like, yeah, it may be like... Yes, Pokemon games are easy, but Oras, I don't think it was any harder than the Gen 3 games it was based off of, but it also had a lot of other cool added story elements, like the whole thing with the Delta episode and going to catch Rayquaza, and we got a lot of cool cutscenes and stuff like that, and being able to catch Deoxys, which was not a thing that we could do before. And then the whole feature with flying through the sky, with soaring through the sky and being able to go catch a bunch of different Pokemon and catch all the legendaries, like those things, since they're not as skill-based, they're just entertaining to do, to like go hunt around and be like a legendary hunter, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, I think it makes sense, but you're saying like, oh, Heart Gold and Soul Silver are like two games in one. But when you actually look at it, it's more like one and a half games. And then if you look at all of the post-game features in Oras, that adds a lot too. It's just not quite as obvious a thing on paper, since basically you're looking at Heart Gold and Soul Silver and it's just like, oh, you fight all these gym leaders and then you get to do it again.
Yeah, but here's the thing, with all RPGs, the experience of navigating through a world is an enjoyment in and of itself, getting to interact with NPCs mm-hmm. and see the locations. And in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, that's what you do, you navigate through Kanto to get to each of these places, whereas yeah. in Oras, the Delta episode basically amounts to hit fly to the place they tell you to go to,
yeah, that's
fight
true.
A few guys, hit fly again, and so on and so forth. And, like, the thing about I like about Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver versus Oras is that it doesn't, like, halt everything to do something. Like, take, for example, when Steven takes you on an island to catch mm-hmm. a Latios or Latias. It happens, like, I believe in the middle of a bridge.
Yeah.
Like, just stops what you're doing, goes on this adventure with Steven, which yeah. basically amounts to fight a couple of guys, then catch Latios and go back. Whereas,
yeah, but...
whereas like, catching things like Ho-Oh and Lugia is an optional thing, and you get to create your own story out of that.
I mean, but here's the thing, is, like, I could see that as both an upside and a downside, though, because, like, we're playing a Pokemon game here, right? Like, the plot should have to do with the Pokemon. The thing that I don't like about the Gen 2 games and Heart Gold and Soul Silver in general is that the plot has almost nothing to do with the legendary Pokemon of the game. Like, Lugia and Ho-Oh are almost completely irrelevant in the plot. In the Gen 3 games, the plot is about Kyogre and Groudon. So I think that they utilize their Pokemon in a lot better way there. And another thing that I want to talk about, if we can transition a little bit, is
wait a minute. I did want to ask, since that was really it started out as a Jeff question, we went back and forth a little bit. Now I wanted to go to a Taimul question.
Fair enough.
Since we did start that out asking about like something that Taimul said was strong in his game, then I'm going to ask Taimul about something that Jeff said was strong in his game. We haven't really talked that much about features of the game for Heart Gold and Soul Silver that aren't to do with like the actual plot of the game. And I remember there were some things...
They brought back the Safari Zone in Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
Right, right. Like, do you think that those are, like, actually just not, like, great parts of the game, or they didn't matter, or do you think that, like...
Well, look, here's the problem that I kind of run into, is that, like, the things they added to Heart Gold and Soul Silver were great, but, like, either A, they were introduced in Diamond and Pearl, or B... This is a 4th-gen game compared to Jeff's 6th-gen game, yeah. So...
Not as fancy toys to play
you
with.
You know, of course Jeff's game is able to add more, so, you know, some of those things are outdated now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Can we talk, just for a moment, in Earth Science?
Yes.
You were saying that obviously Maxie and Archie don't understand earth science in Oras or in Ruby and Sapphire, which, you know, may be perfectly true. I don't fucking know. But also, like, weather is fucked in Pokemon, right? Because, like, Pokemon can just make the sun shine brighter and make rain clouds happen.
Even if you're in a cave?
Yeah, like, is it really that they're messing with a, or sort of a close to real world ecosystem? Or can Pokemon just create things like rain clouds and the sun? I don't know.
I don't know, man. Like,
and how does this change the narratives?
I think that, I mean, I think that Pokemon, by its nature, is a really silly concept. And I think that the ridiculous scheme of Maxie and Archie to either drench or drought the world.
Or expand the land with volcanoes and shit.
Yeah, exactly. Is perfectly in theme with Pokemon's tone.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, to continue talking about evil teams, I like how they, how Heart Gold and Soul Silver tied Silver to Team Rocket by making it canonical that Giovanni is Silver's father in the Celebi event, and it added more depth to your rival, and unlike rivals in later games, he's not like some honorable guy or some peppy person who...
Yeah, he's a goth.
He's an actual asshole. You want to, like, beat him. You know, you are motivated. He, just like Blue. Mm-hmm. He also, like, has a character arc in the game itself where he starts off an asshole, but, like, comes to understand the value of bonding with Pokemon, and that expanding bond is actually, like, shown in the mechanics of the game when you, like, see him start off with a Zubat and then, like, eventually have a Crobat.
Yeah, that happens with, like, Wally and May, too, though.
Yeah, but they were already nice people.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair. Earlier, Jeffrey made an argument, Timewool, about the legendaries in Oras, like, being more tied to the story and more relevant. Like, even Latios and Latias, the other legendaries that weren't really tied to the story before, are now, like, more tied to what's going on in Oras. And, like, do you think that that's, like, a valid argument, or do you have any counters for that? What do you think about the treatment of legendaries in HeartGold, SoulSilver?
I think, like, having the legendaries involved in the story is a double-edged sword. On one hand, it does give the games more depth. On the other hand, it also, like, creates this kind of hand-holding thing where it's like, okay, now go catch Groudon. Okay, now go fight Rayquaza and catch him. So on and so forth. And I like the ability to just decide whenever you want, when you catch, like, Ho-Ho and Lugia, and whenever you want, when you get Entei and Suicune. Or, in this version, Suicune actually is something you come across.
Yeah.
Which is a holdover from Pokemon Crystal. But, like, with Entei and Raikou, that's optional. And it's kind of a chance to create your own story, because at the end of the day, none of the Pokemon games, except with maybe the Black and White and Black and White 2, have, like, an in-depth story. And, like, the ability to make your own fun is, I think, a big part of what makes Pokemon games appealing. And because of that optionality, the discovery of the unknown, the discovery of Ho-Oh and Lugia feels like it's your own thing. In fact, I have a thing about how great Fighting Red is later. All right, Jeff, you had your hand up for a while.
Okay, yeah, Jeff.
Yeah, so I have things to say about that. I totally agree. I agree that it is a double-edged sword, and I think that there are pros and cons to each way of looking at it. The thing is, Oras does both, whereas Heart Gold, Soul Silver only does the one. Because in Oras, you have the main legendaries as part of the plot, and it's tied in, and it makes sense, and it makes you care about the Pokemon that you're actually catching. And then, in the post-game, they have the added element of being able to soar through the sky and go and find all these other legendaries. No one ever tells you about this. You can just encounter them. And I remember doing it, and I was thinking, like, oh, I'm, like, a fucking legendary trophy hunter. So there's definitely, like, you know, that element of being able to put your own story into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of got the best of both worlds in that sense, because it has the legendaries that are tied into the plot, and it also has the legendaries that you can just go and encounter on your own. Whereas Heart Gold and Soul Silver, the legendaries are just things that you can encounter. And I would like to talk at some point about the roaming feature, because that is something in the Pokemon games that I've always hated.
Yeah, no, you can definitely talk about the roaming feature right now, and then unless Time Will, you have something to say before he talks about the roaming feature.
Nothing that comes before the roaming feature.
Yes.
Okay. In Heart Gold and Soul Silver, they had these roaming Pokemon, right? They also existed in Gold and Silver. They existed in Ruby and Sapphire, and they existed in
Black and White.
And I really dislike the roaming feature. I know a lot of people think very fondly about the roaming feature because it presented some sort of challenge. I don't think that it was challenging. I think that it was random and luck-based. because how the mechanic works is basically once you randomly encounter one of the roaming Pokemon the first time, then it'll give you a little thing on the map that shows where it is now. But that changes every time you walk into a new area. So if you see it on a map, if you see it's in a specific route and you fly there, suddenly it's no longer in that route. And you'd think you could just chase it around and it would follow like a linear path and you could cut it off somewhere. That is just not how it works. It pops up randomly all over the place and it's so frustrating to find. It takes a while, so it is work in that sense, but it's not skill-based work. It's just random and luck-based work. And in Oras, the main roaming ones in Ruby and Sapphire were Latias and Latios, which is no longer roaming. Instead, it's just given to you, which I would not say is better because it's just given to you. But I see why they did it for the Soaring in the Sky feature. But all the new Pokemon that you can catch through the Soaring in the Sky, you have to plan out how to catch them because some of them only show up on specific days of the week. Some of them show up only at specific times of the day. And there's like so many different ones you can plan. Like, you can go get Palkia in Omega Ruby, and you can get Dialga in Alpha Sapphire, but you can only get Giratina if you have both Dialga and Palkia in your party, so that encourages interacting with other people and trading and stuff like that. I just think it's a lot more of an elegant way to do it, and the roaming thing was just really frustrating, and I'm glad that it's gone.
I mean, speaking of annoying-ass legendaries, Oras, like, really bungled it with Rayquaza and Deox. You want to know fucking why?
Okay, but I think that, wasn't it the case that if you didn't catch Deoxys, then you could go back and catch it, and no one knew?
I didn't know at the time. Like, no one knew, so they all experienced the horrible experience.
I know, I agree. I watched that cutscene like 3 times.
Like, okay, for the listeners, here's how it goes down, alright? You have a cutscene involving, like, oh, you gotta fight Rayquaza and, like, gain his trust and, like, capture him, right? You go through all the trouble of catching Rayquaza, which, I remind you, involved throwing Pokeball after Pokeball at the goddamn dragon.
Rayquaza was not that hard to catch, though. Like, they definitely made the catch rate higher for that game, because I remember catching it on the first Pokeball, like, a couple times. It was mostly just annoying because we had to watch the cutscene over and over again, but continue.
Yeah, you catch him. Another cutscene, Deoxys comes out. You're leading with Rayquaza, so you can't use the Abra synchronized method of getting the nature of Deoxys you want.
For competitive Pokemon battling, you usually want Pokemon to be of a specific nature, is what he's referring to there.
Yeah, so, like, you gotta, like, sync Rayquaza to the nature you want, but, like, for Deoxys, it's, like, a 1 out of 24 chance of getting what you want.
Okay, but here's the thing, Chatter, I just looked it up, and though it was not presented to us in the plot, and that was scary, and we didn't feel like looking it up, so we watched that cutscene multiple times, if you do not catch it in space, he'll be on the Sky Pillar, and you can go catch him afterwards. So you can catch Rayquaza, get the right nature, not catch Deoxys, and then save, get the right nature one, and it's all fine. Like, I agree that it was deceptive of the game to present it that way because, like, you didn't want to risk it, but if we had looked it up, you could have had your cake and eaten it too without having to watch that cutscene 3 times. So it's not inherently flaw in the game that they did that.
On the other hand, they could have just, like, made you fly into space and then land on the meteor.
And then let you save, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. Like, that would have been a better solution, but I'm saying
that's
that
fair.
It's not quite as bad as it seemed when we were playing it.
Okay.
Can we just talk about whatever? Because I did want to talk about the battle with
Yes, Tech. You wanted to talk about the red battle. And, I mean, I would like to see how you're going to show how the difficulty and the epic nature of the red battle is better than any sort of analog in Generation 6. But, yeah, go.
So, yeah, the battle with Red does involve some nostalgia, but, like, since we're talking about remakes and, like, how they managed to draw in a new audience while also, like, pleasing the nostalgic fanbase, I think it applies. Like, Red is interesting because he's not really a character, but, like, when you fight Red, it feels personal because you know his journey, because his journey was yours. You meet him atop a cold mountain, and he uses Pokemon that you probably would have used in Red and Blue or Fire Red and Leaf Green, and it just feels super fucking epic, especially with the music that plays in the background, you know? And that's always been, like, a moment in Pokemon that, like, stuck out to me. And I know it stuck out to a lot of people as well. It's just great to, like, do that, because it's just an epic moment, and it really gets the heart pumping right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's not epic. It was a really cool moment. I agree. I think it's a little weird because, like, as you said in a few episodes ago, Chowder, or maybe it was last episode, I don't fucking remember, I don't know how this works. It's like trying to give Link a character, you know? Like, Red is a character that you project yourself onto, so it's a little weird when you find out that he's, like, this really weird, quiet, stoic person who's, like, sulking on top of a mountain and, like, trying... It's just like...
Well, you don't know if he's sulking.
Well, to be, yeah, fair, the sulking is your projection onto the character.
Fair.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, no, super epic. There isn't talking. We are a little bit over time because I am a fool. Okay. But if you had any last words that you wanted to wrap up before I tally up this business.
I would like to, I don't know, I didn't talk a lot about the feature of the battle resort.
Oh, I mean, you can do that.
Basically, it makes breeding really easy because there's a section where you can just go on an infinite loop, which I'm not going to explain the mechanics of because we're low on time. But for hatching Pokemon, that's really helpful because you hatch them by stepping. So you can just go on this infinite loop, and it's really nice for breeding and hatching Pokemon, which is really, really convenient for the metagame and was not carried through to the later games. That's my bit.
That's fair. So yeah, Timewool, do you want to say anything in response to him talking about the Battle Resort ability to breed, walk in a circle without changing your direction?
I got nothing to say about that. He's right.
It's just a quality of life thing, man.
Yeah, no, it is a quality of life thing. It makes life easier for obsessives like us.
Then in this case, I would like to, let's go opposite direction. Chowder, give me your 30 seconds on your argument, closing statement, pretend it's debate club.
All right.
Because I know you were into that. That was a lie, everybody.
Starting now. So Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver, is a fourth generation game, and thus it has all the fourth generation improvements that come with it. It also, like, benefits from being a remake of one of the most popular games, Gold and Silver. It has a great single player that's super enjoyable, and I think that's important because at the end of the day, most of the fan base are people who are casual players, players who are just there to have the Pokemon Adventure experience. Obsessives
okay.
Like us...
You're good. I gave you a little extra time because you did have like almost 10 seconds of there in the middle when you were thinking about what you were saying. So that was more than 30 seconds, but it's 30 seconds. You're good boy. Jeffrey boy, go.
Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire are the most refined and well-polished games in the Pokemon franchise. The new features added strike a perfect balance between making the in-game campaign more enjoyable and the post-game metagame more convenient and streamlined. For example, Soaring Through the Sky adds a tremendous amount of post-game entertainment as well as convenience. The Battle Resort allows Oras to be the most convenient for breeding Pokemon in the metagame. Hoenn, having one of the strongest regional Pokedexes, makes Oras entertaining, but the game also shines in its ability to be enjoyable and convenient in the post and metagame.
Okay.
Should have run mine down. Oh, well.
That's fair. It's always for next time. Okay, so we're done with that summary, and now we're doing ratings or something?
Yeah, let's do ratings or something.
That's a pretty good debate. I think you guys talked about most of the relevant stuff.
Wait, I never mentioned the best part of Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
I know.
The lead.
And now you'll never get to.
The lead Pokemon
no,
in
no,
your...
No, we don't. We, no, you didn't no, bring it up during no, the debate. No, no, I no, took no, note. No. I almost mentioned it.
Nope. Hold up. Hold up. Let me just say
it. I mean, we are technically out. It is a great part of the game, but maybe...
The world was never meant to know.
You can say it. You can say it. It's just not going to count, though.
That's fine. I just want to say it.
Okay, good. Say it. Say it.
The lead Pokemon in your party gets to follow you around, like in Pokemon Yellow, and it's great because it's adorable, and whenever you talk to your Pokemon that's following you around, it does its adorable stuff, like poke you in the belly, or like notice something about the environment you're in.
Equally, I did not mention that in Oras, when you surf on certain Pokemon, you're actually riding on them instead of riding on a generic blue ball, and one of those Pokemon that you can surf on is Kyogre, and you see yourself riding a Kyogre, and when you dive, you're underwater riding a Kyogre, and it's fucking awesome. That does not work with Groudon.
And also, like, people still challenge you to battles when you've got your Kyogre or your Lugia or your Ho-Oh just
know,
chilling
right?
with you because they're
right?
dumb.
There's this one part where someone will be like, oh, wow, you have a Poke Gear? That's awesome. Wow, you might have, like, God right behind you.
It's like when someone tries to pickpocket you in Skyrim while you're a werewolf, and you're just like, eh, I'll just eat you alive, motherfucker. Anywho, so that's a really weird analogy, because Pokemon was definitely before Skyrim, but... So now I would like each of you to rate the other's domain on the basis of their argument. So, Jeffrey, you can't talk about Pokemon walking around next to you, and Timewool, you can't talk about surfing on Kyogre. And you have to rate it out of 5 Rage Candy Bars. Because that is an item from the original second generation games, which makes an appearance in almost all of the subsequent games in some form.
There we go.
And Jeffrey, start us off.
All right. This is really tough, because I think that if there was one other game to compete against, I truly believe that Arceus is the best game, but if there was one game that even stood close, it would be Heart Gold and Soul Silver. I think that these are the only two games to talk about. I'm going to have to give Heart Gold and Soul Silver a 4 out of 5 Rage Candy Bars. It's a really fun game, and yeah, I guess I can't talk about the fact that I have a little companion. No, yeah, I'm going to have to give it a 3 out of 5 without being able to talk about the fact that I've got a companion Pokemon following me around, honestly. I think that the element of going back and to revisit Kanto is really cool, and especially being able to fight Red. I don't, however, think that it's quite as exciting as it seems like it is on paper, because a lot of those story elements I found were just kind of like drawn out, added, and kind of boring, and it didn't really have the same stakes as the rest of the plot, which is weird to say in a Pokemon game, because usually the stakes are absurd, like fucking drowning the whole world. But yeah, that's my bit, so I'm gonna give it 3 out of 5.
I mean, yeah.
With the following Pokemon thing, I would give it a 4 out of 5, just saying, but...
Yeah.
Because that feature is hype.
Yeah.
Yeah, go time, Will.
All right, let me tell you. When I was coming up to this recording, like, I'm thinking, man, this is going to be tough because Arceus is really good. It does add a lot of great quality of life things that make life so much better, like being able to breed easier and so on and so forth. Something about the 3D graphics in Arceus, it's really good because, like, it allows characters to be more expressive and emotive.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, little animations you might see before fighting a gym leader really do a lot to, like, make that character feel like a character. So it works to that advantage, and like the story that's there is enjoyable, and I love like Team Magma and Team Aqua's really dumb plan, just like Jeff. You know, the two are like really close, and like I love Heart Gold and Soul Silver. It's my favorite in the entire series, but if there's a close second, it's gotta be Arceus. I would rate both 4 out of 5 Rage Candy Bars, so there you go.
Okay, good stuff. Yeah, so this one was actually this was interesting. We had some stuff going on. You guys, you had a pretty good job of, like, saying things that were problematic about the other person's game, and then showing how your game either had something that was similar but better, or you would say that, like, it didn't matter. I think you're going tit for tat on a lot of this stuff, but, a couple things really stood out to me here. So... I guess I'm gonna announce it and then explain my thinking, because it's more suspenseful that way. Yeah, I'm gonna give away the Golden Master Ball.
Cool.
So, as I said, it was super close, but I think I am gonna have to give this one to Jeffrey Levitt.
Woo!
Take the ball.
Yeah.
The Master Ball that Jeff will never use, because he might need it when it's more important later.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Good point. I don't think I've ever used a Master Ball, actually.
It was a valiant effort on both sides. And good time, Will. I didn't think that you were going to construct as good of an argument as you did, especially considering that you just forgot to talk about the Pokemon walking next to you until after the discussion was over.
Like, I got distracted with other things, whatever.
But I was really into the way that you were talking about how the narrative in Heart Gold and Soul Silver was just, like, an updated and more refined thing. I think you were probably right. I would say that the narrative of Heart Gold and Soul Silver was more compelling and elegant than Arceus, but, like, Arceus, it's a game. It's for kids. The fun factor is important, so there's that. Also, I think that, Jeffrey, you did end up making a really good point about, the fucking... chase mechanic for the roaming thing. That really does. I guess it probably wouldn't have mattered as much in the original games where you didn't have natures, so it wouldn't matter when you caught the Pokemon, because like but in the remakes, that's a huge detriment, I think, to actually like playing the game and trying to, like, do well battling. Yeah. And although Time Wolf did say that, like, you know, it's not just about battling, it is about, like, the single-player game, that it's also not just about the single-player game. So, yeah, I don't know. Good stuff all around. I was also, like, I think you did a pretty good job about, like, how you make it your own story, talking about the legendaries and stuff, Time Wolf, but, like, I also feel like I thought that you did miss kind of an opportunity to talk about, like, the atmosphere that it creates. Like, when you're in Ecruteak City, and it's, like, the two burned-down towers, and it's sort of a mystery that it invites you to investigate instead of just, like, an adventure that you can go have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with, like, Ho-Oh being the creator of the legendary beasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was cool.
But, yeah, overall, good stuff. It was really close.
I would just like to say that, Chowder, that I thought you had really good arguments, and it was a battle well fought. I would give you a handshake right now if we weren't talking over Skype.
Beautiful. Yeah, also, I don't know, like, Jeffrey, generally pretty good. I did honestly want to hear more about multiverse theory. I know it's not super relevant in ORAS, but, like, just always. Whenever we can bring it up, I'm fucking about it. Anywho, that about wraps it up. Again, I'm your host, Austin, and this week's battle, it was about Pokemon. It was a Pokemon battle, as bum, you might
bum,
say.
Bum, 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 bum.
And it was Jeff and Time Wolf talking about the pros and cons of Heart Gold and Soul Silver and Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. You can check them out at Pokemon.com or, like, just Google.
Buy them for the DS or 3DS.
Or just, like, remember when you played them? I don't know. Like, they're pretty ubiquitous at this point.
Yeah.
Our next episode will be hosted by who talking about what?
It is me. I am hosting an episode about a Transformers comic called More Than Meets the Eye. The specific issue is issue 22. We're going to be talking about self-referential humor is the thing.
Okay.
It can be found at comic shops, probably.
Okay. Well, be sure to read up before it airs next week on November 17th. If any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us right on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a review. It's a great way for more people to find our show, as is recommending us to friends. The most effective form of advertisement. If you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Hex Maniac Austin Liebers, joined by Juggler Jeff Levitt and Cool Trainer Timewool Chowder Chodery. This episode is sponsored by the last minute realization that it would have made way more sense for this episode to air a week later instead, when the new Pokemon games are getting released. Whoops. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by Jeff Levitt and Timewool Chodery, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like this show, follow us, tell your friends, or leave a review. We hope you tune in for our next episode on November 17th, and thank you for listening to this.
But that's interesting. We should definitely have an episode sometime that's all about characters who don't say things. Like, characters with very little characterization just for you to, yeah. Like,
oh, man. That,
throw yourself in there.
That seems yeah. fun. You know, you got, like, Gromit, Snoopy, Link, Mario, to an extent.
Early Master Chief.
Wait, hold the fuck up. How are you putting Gromit and Snoopy in those categories? They just don't speak because they're dogs. They're not, like, fucking player characters for to project yourself onto.
Well, no. Austin said characters that don't speak, you know, so...
I think Snoopy, like, kind of speaks, like, in the comic True. Strip. With he does thought bubble stuff
yeah.
all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
Gromit speaks with his sultry eyes.
Jeffrey, I didn't know some things about you until just then. And I don't know if I want to know any more about that part of you.